blessings of love and respect to be offered to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Sharanam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Saha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Sharanam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Saha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangham Sharanam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Saha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, and anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the content of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassion and comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, By the compassion and mindfulness that proves this path, by a compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 great prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct jnana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I'm born of karma. I'm an heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I'm supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again, may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. beyond suffering. And if ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Just a reminder that Sunday morning groups were recorded and made available to monthly donors. So, what shall we look at today?
Wow.
Jen. There's just, gratitude for everything.
Gratitude for everything. Good place to start.
And just seeing the, so we had this week, part of the week, and then leading into the weekend, we did a lot of outdoor working meditation. And just seeing so many parallels with the transformation that happened on the property, which we spoke about a few nights ago, but I don't think we were all here, and the transformation that happened in us. And that actually, even as that comes out of my mouth, it's so funny that we'd even see those as two things, you know?
Yeah, and that we'd even see that there's a distinction between internal and external, which is arbitrary, and yet, in some senses, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? That it is not different. It's not one, but not two either.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it's, the way it dropped in this morning has slipped away a bit, so maybe it will come back. But the gratitude for all of it, and again, I guess that theme of it's all one thing. So I was really looking at it with the lotuses, especially. So the pond, the water feature we have in the monastery courtyard, has these beautiful lotuses that grow. I guess they're also water lilies, I don't know if that's, and so, you know, that's a symbol in Buddhism, the lotus, and you always hear about that, you know, it grows out of the muck, this beautiful thing, okay? So, we're laughing because we were in the muck, literally, and that's what, it's just so much.
So to me, that is the pure, the intrinsic purity is never tainted.
Yes.
That's what the symbol of the lotus is.
Right.
That no matter what happens underneath, that essence is never anything but beautiful and innocent.
Yeah. And so how are we with the parallels? Because what I was seeing is, and that the muck is great too.
Yes.
Right? Yes. There's no, here's this a piece of it. just seeing that place where Sherry will talk about, as far as we can tell, life doesn't have preferences for the lotus over the tubers and the roots that, I mean, the what nature has done in that pond does everywhere is astounding. I mean, right, we don't know how it all started, but maybe it all started with just the tiny, tiny little thing that weighed, you know, so much in this one. Boom! All of this is becoming, still happening. And that just being one little illustration of it, where these things that look like, you know, roots, like a big fat root, gets put in there 15 years ago. And then it just creates this entire huge ecosystem under there and does what it needs to do over time in order to create all the things that then these amazing, beautiful lotuses come out of. It's extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. Yeah, that if I'm understanding, I don't know if this is a parallel to the internal and external transformation, is
I was hoping you would that make it.
Pardon?
I was hoping you would see it.
Well, I project widely over you. How about that? You only see the lotus.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
We don't see all that
that's
going on underneath that is participating in the lotus being what we see.
Yes.
And what is in the lotus is not distinct from what's under the lotus.
Yes.
It's all the same thing.
Yes.
And so the transformation of what's going on from seed to the manifestation of the lotus is often hidden, but it's all part of the same process.
Yeah.
And the conditioned perspective is to appreciate the lotus and ignore all of what went to make it that and separate it into two distinct things.
Right.
And the transformation I project when we get up against it the way I project you did with your feet in the muck is to appreciate the whole thing.
Yes. And to not...
I hope that was why we...
That was fantastic. So because the conditioned process is, I have got to get rid of this muck. And guess what's going to happen to the lotus?
It's going to be it'll be
destroyed. Right? And that I just saw, as you were saying that, that it's such a perfect parallel to an experience I often have in recording and listening, which is that as I'm recording whatever I'm recording, and I'm aware of everything that's going on, that the voices are saying or attempting to do or blah, 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 right? So it's like this sort of split experience.
Mm-hmm.
And what's astounding to me, especially if I listen back to a recording that I made some time ago, is that I only have the experience of the recording. But I know, I have a memory of what was going on, and it will be something along the lines of, you know, I don't know what, an assessment of it, right? You don't really think that, or that's not really, or this is, and yet, when I listen to that recording, I just have the pure experience of that recording, and I can see the purity of that recording, even though there was all that stuff behind it. And so it's like the conditioning is to identify with the voices, basically, with the stuff, and to see that that's not actually true.
So if I can reflect and connect, in recording, there's an awareness of what is being recorded, as there is an awareness of the assessment. So the experience is really both. The condition process is to just to focus on the conditioning aspect of it, missing out on the awareness that contained both. And then when we listen to the recording, we have the purity of the recording with the noticing or being present to the absence of the conditioning. Right? And so they're all different metaphors for the experience that we were just talking about. That the recording is the purity of the lotus. Right? That when we are aware of the muck being muck and the lotus being lotus, it's the awareness of the of both. But the conditioned process would look at the muck and distinguish it and make it distinct. And the transformation is when we realize that you can't have the lotus without the muck. And so the thing that makes that not okay is the absence, is what needs to be absent for it to be all okay.
Yeah.
But the perfection is not just in the lotus.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. That is all life.
It's all life.
There's no mistake here. There can be this, you know, the conditioned version of it is I have to transcend this mistake.
Yes.
Happening inside my head, this aberration, this, you know.
Well, it's the holy idea of the one.
Uh-huh. Perfect.
Right, it's all perfection. Yeah. There's an unfolding perfection, and there isn't only perfection in the form of the lotus.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all.
Yeah.
It's all of it.
Yeah.
Just as it is.
Yes, and what's dropping in as we're saying that is that the Sun Tzu Ming, the way of beauty for those who have no preference.
Right?
Because it's all, gosh, it's really true. It's really true. So that going around in our day-to-day lives and whatever comes up, you know, envy, irritation, there, right in that, staying with that, through that is the transformation. Instead of the, you know, there it is again, why are you shouldn't be, you know, but just, just staying.
And we often have to destroy in that sense of, if you think about the lotus and the tubers and the muck all being one thing,
mm-hmm.
in order to get a clean pond, everything has to go. You cannot be attached to the purity and detached from the muck. And the process that we're all going through is being completely cleaned out.
Yeah. Oh, that's so perfect. When I was the first one in, right? So when I first started to clear things, I was very aware of the last thing to go was the lotuses.
Mm-hmm.
There was that sense of like, and I just watched, and that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, pick the leaves, green, a bunch of green leaves, pick, who cares, you know, I mean, not really, who cares, but just that sense of like, but the lotus. The lotus, that's so somehow important and special.
Yeah. But that, and coming back to that, even that has to go.
Exactly.
In order for us to get that the whole thing is life.
Yeah.
Wow. We could write a whole story.
Yeah.
Parable and then story of the pond trip.
Well, and again, to make the point we were looking at the other night, that was one thing that was going on this one property. In this one county.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, I mean, right? You can get so big and realize, wow, it's big.
Yeah, it is.
Cameron. Yeah, I had a lovely process involved with the work, and when I heard about the possibility of participating in some work that needed to be done down here at the monastery, the response was, oh, I wish I could do that.
Uh-huh, I wish I could do that.
Yeah, because I've been for months now having this very intense pain in various parts of my body. I don't know why, and it moves around, and I never know how bad it's going to be when.
Mm-hmm.
And so the look to condition mind, I can't do that. I know it's going to be way too physical because...
Yeah.
I may show up and can't even hardly hobble around, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first iteration.
Uh-huh, the desire and the immediate,
comment by, you know, the limitation.
The limitation, yeah.
Not for you. Not only can't you, but you probably would just be a burden, probably,
uh-huh.
because you can't probably participate in a really, So then... kind of moved along, and just that desire was still there. So I thought, well, maybe I could just say yes and come on down, and maybe there's some kind of easier things to do. Maybe they wouldn't make me, haul a boulder somewhere. So then I wrote an email and said, well, I've had these problems but so then it the next iteration was, well, I think I could just come down and just get in the pool of people who, not in that pool. I don't know about that. Just go to get a work assignment and just say yes. And who knows what it would be, and who knows, it might be one of those good days and I might be able to do it. So that's what I ended up doing, was just saying, okay, I'll get a job, I'll go do it, and if I can do it, great. If I can't, I'll just communicate that I need something a little bit less strenuous or something. And what happened was, that's the process that kept happening all along.
Yes.
And everything that I was given was harder than I thought what I would be capable of doing. Not necessarily because it was carrying a boulder, but because it was so bloody hot and it was kind of long, you know, it went on and on. But I just kept saying yes, and I just kept, this body kept being able to do it.
So the process is, there's a heart movement towards something. The heart is drawn towards something. Conditioning always imposes the limitations. There's sufficient practice to be willing to follow the heart impulse. And that knowledge of, I'll see, right? Which is so opposite to what conditioning does. It's the immediate no. And I think someone said the antidote to to resistance is curiosity. Right? I don't know, but I'm willing to see, and I have a very powerful tool, which is communication. If I can't do it, I will say so, but it doesn't, it's putting, conditioning puts together two things that are not related, which is pain and willingness to show up, right? So the story is, I'm not going to be able to do it, so I won't show up.
Yeah.
And we show up to find out that those two things are not related.
Right.
That pain doesn't have to prevent us from showing up.
Right. And I knew whichever way it went, it was going to be a great workshop because the communication part of it.
Yes.
You know, it's very hard for this conditioned being to say, I can't do this, or, you know, there's something that prevents me from being having the ability to do something that I've been, you know.
You've committed.
So I knew one way or another it was going to be a good workshop, and hopefully I would be able to, you know, contribute too. And as it went on, it just, there were things being done by this body that I would not have anticipated having the strength or the ability or whatever is going on in my body to do.
Well, it makes us suspect that it is because we believe the story that we can't.
Yes.
That we don't actually have an experience that proves that story to be invalid.
Right.
Right? And the willingness to prove the lie is the experience that we have. No matter how hard it is, that process of doing it on a moment-by-moment basis is what assists us to have the experience of our adequacy.
Right. Well, I actually have been experimenting with that line, because some days it's bad, some days it's not. So I've been doing things that other days I couldn't do, but this, out in the sun all day and in this heat, I just thought was, you know, way above the bar. And so that I proved the lack of intelligence in listening to that, because it wasn't true.
It wasn't true. And that doesn't take away from the fact that on the days when the pain was real, there was willingness but no capacity. And we really tune into and listen to the intelligence that never anticipates, but is intelligent.
Yes.
And tuning into that is a tremendous source of power, but it's also, I project, a tremendous source of trust.
Yes.
Because we don't have to turn to this for safety.
That's right. Yeah, being primarily the six on the Enneagram, safety is like a prominent thing. And it has been looking to that.
Yeah, and would you say it's not so much safety as uncertainty?
The safety comes
from the need for something against the uncertainty of it.
Ah, like control.
That's like control. And so the experience of being in the moment is the safest place to be because it has the only information we can tune into for the moment.
That is so perfect. Yeah, that, oh wow. Have to listen to this again and pull that sentence right out.
Yeah.
Because, yes, that's so true.
And I think you found the antidote to the fear of uncertainty, which is the willingness to be present.
Yeah, to say yes, mm-hmm. and go ahead and see.
And I'll find out.
I'll find out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And surprise, surprise.
Yes.
yes.
Surprise, surprise. Wow, I love that, right? You trip over joy then.
yes, I guess that's true, yes.
Well, they let go of those 1,000 moves.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of 10,000
moves. Yeah.
Moves beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Scott, did I see your hand?
Yeah. Well, not only do we have a working retreat, but we're in a practice weekend.
Yes.
And we're just having. No,
never stop.
Exactly.
INW, work yep. retreat, practice weekend. Go
it's
ahead.
So much fun. And I just wanted to say that for folks who are listening on the recording that. It'd be great to make your way out here. I mean, they probably hear it when they listen to these Sunday recordings, but it's such a blessed opportunity to be here.
It is a blessed opportunity.
Yeah. And I'm just having a ton of fun recently, or I don't know, most of the time I'm having a ton of fun. And
that was the assignment of yesterday.
Yeah. Well, that was fun too because, so yeah, we had an assignment about fun.
Yeah.
And, so I have this exercise routine that I do that has three segments, and the first one is dance. But it's not a timer, so mm-hmm. each section has a certain amount of time that I'm committed to doing it. And so I was practicing with the assignment in my what I normally do. Mm-hmm. It was like, well, why does it have to be 3 minutes? You know, because I've been doing this for so long, it starts to get into a, okay, so now it's time to
dance
and have fun. And I was like, well, how about we just dance and see how it goes? Uh-huh. And then when we're done dancing, we'll stop. Uh-huh. You know? And it brought back that life energy that I think originally that
started it. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, it's such an important process point that you are underlining for us, right, Scott? That it always starts with a fabulous life impulse. Uh-huh. And then we create the structure to assist us to keep our commitments to the life impulse. Uh-huh. And then over time, conditioning drains the life impulse up and makes it just about the structure.
Yeah.
And then when we notice that, we notice that through grace.
Yes.
And paying attention that that energy of life that I started this with is not available to me now. Mm-hmm. And then we have that place of, okay, let me just dance so that I can get connected back to what this was for in the first place.
Yeah, well, and what is so?
What is so, yes.
Yeah, and it reminds me of what we've been looking at a little bit about how we are the Buddha. We are all that is, and it just gets taken over in conversation.
Yes.
And that's just another way that it gets taken over.
Yes, but it's another way that it gets taken over.
Yeah, I guess it's been so much fun lately, and just so clear, but that doesn't change that we are all. We are the life force. We, you know, there's just a process where our attention goes over here, talks us out of it. You know, mine's often like, that's not for you or not you, even though I'm actually having the experience right then.
but that point you made, that's what we've got to get, right?
Yeah.
Which is no matter how successful, within quotes, conditioning is of taking us over, it does not deny the fact that we are with us.
Yeah. Okay. And to have a practice that shows us that makes me want to empty out the pond and let go of everything, including the lotus, or to empty the teacup.
Yes.
Because you just said there, it's the, what were we looking at yesterday, the fabulous move.
Yes.
It makes it so clear.
Yes.
I surrender.
Yes.
Empty out even the lotus. Yes. You know, but I want to, because there's something so much bigger than me,
yes,
that I could be that I am a part of.
Yes. So if I'm tracking, when we drop into that place of knowing that whatever conditioning has said or done to take me over for a while doesn't deny the Buddhahood within,
yeah,
then we're really motivated. Then we get to that place of surrender.
Yeah.
Because now I'm ready to empty the teacup or the pond or let go of everything that assists me to come back to that experience of Buddhahood over and over and over again.
And that life is setting it up for us to come back to that experience over and over again.
Yeah.
It's like the music that we start to see, oh, well, what's in it? How is this for me to wake up? We receive everything.
Yes.
And that way, in that place, there is no separation. Well, I like to have the butterfly but not the mosquito. We
yes.
see everything as serving our awakening.
Yes. Well, and to me, I think you make two points. One, that the realization that however often I'm taken over doesn't deny the Buddhahood is huge, because what conditioning is attempting to do is to make us feel bad. You are not the Buddha is the experience we're meant to have.
Yeah.
But to really get to that place of, no, it does. What's going on here has nothing to do with the process. It's
right.
One mega step.
Yeah.
But the next mega step uh-huh. is that the process itself is part of the awakening.
Yes.
Right? So there is identification allows us to disidentify.
Yeah.
When we get to that orientation,
uh-huh.
then practice is fun.
And then it's, yes, please, thank you, I love you.
Yes, please, thank you, I love you.
Uh-huh. And then just the last thing.
And the whole thing is set up by life.
Yes.
Right? Because
yeah.
you can't get to that place if you haven't had the experience over and over again.
Yeah.
Until you get to that place and go, everything is for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of then spiritual practice doesn't begin until the beating stops. Now we can have fun. Now we're in awareness.
Now we're in awareness. Now we can balance with consciousness itself.
Yeah. I had this thing drop in, the last thing I'd say was related was, you know, the story is I'm in story a lot. You know.
Oh, the story is you're in a story a lot.
Yeah.
Very difficult to see that as a story.
Yeah. And that all we're ever doing is what we were just saying, you know, practicing coming to that space between the thoughts, and Sherry would say that. And you just keep coming, pretty, you know, and then pretty soon you're spending your time in that space between the thoughts. And then she said, and then you find yourself walking around, and all of a sudden you'll be aware, oh my gosh, I was in a conversation.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. And there's something about that that was just like a bam.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess what I was seeing today, this morning, is that's possible.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For this life force, this that to live that way is possible.
And perhaps that's how the life force is living.
Yeah. Well, then that's right. How else would I know that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I just got so excited.
Yes.
Because often it says, yeah, well, maybe in another lifetime. Maybe you're setting mm-hmm. yourself up for another thing. And it's like, no, I'm not falling for that one.
No.
You know.
Yeah, so the thing that with practice we shift from being in the story and coming to occasionally to living in life
mm-hmm.
and being aware of the story occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is the possibility that we have in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, Michael, pick one and we'll come down this way.
I love that story about I'm in the story a lot.
Yes.
Because even if I spend 99% of my time living life, you know, that 1%, it's telling me that the 99% that I'm actually in the story.
Yes.
So.
Yes, it's how it robs us of
yes.
life, right?
Yes.
That,
yes.
in other words, the attention on the negative, on what's not, basically eliminates everything that is
uh-huh.
and our experience of it. And is the frame from which we view our lives.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That seems critical because conditions trying to put that negative tint over everything, even though my experience could be that it's all great.
Yes. And that you live that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what
yeah.
you like.
Yeah. And I also appreciate being here. It's fabulous to be here. With Sangha, it's a beautiful place. And I do take advantage of many virtual opportunities, and it's great to be here.
Yeah.
This is so great to be here.
Yes, I think this is what we were looking at. I mean, my experience of that is that there's a certain connection we make when it's tangible,
yeah,
that we don't make when it's cerebral. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And what I see in that is that everywhere I look here, everything I experience is practice. Mm-hmm. And at home, you know, I'll be on an RLB call or open air, and then conditioning, you know, will set up the story of, yeah, but you're not, you know, look at your work or your home, or, you know, it's not practice. And so it's great to be able to take out that piece of conditioning,
mm-hmm,
by being here and have everything visually, emotionally here reflected of being at the monastery, you know, on retreat.
Well, it's interesting, Michael, so let me just reflect that, because there's two really interesting things that you said there. Because here, everything mirrors practice, and so there, because of that, in some sense, perhaps, the ability for conditioning to say you're not surrounded by practice is rather, it would be not very smart. It's a stretch, because it's the tangible proof of all the structures mirroring your heart. And it's interesting that when we are doing something like reflective listening buddies or making a choice for practice, the assessment is that the rest of it isn't.
Yes.
Which goes back to the first comment you made about the awareness of, okay, well, these are the little ways in which you do practice, but you are not surrounded by it.
Right.
And that's just an interesting juxtaposition.
Yes, it is. And it goes back to, well, it's certainly back to the first point, but conditioning wants to discount all the way that practice is embodied in my life.
Yes, exactly.
And the kindness and compassion that is happening, and this is the wrong word, but practically, automatically, as a result of practicing for years.
Yes.
So it's really good to remember.
Well, that's why we have a recorder.
Yeah. And it will often take sort of feedback from other people to remind me of that I have embodied a lot of that.
Yeah.
That I often get feedback about how kind or patient or not stressed I am. It comes as a surprise. Because I think it's interrupting conditioning story about
it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and sort of the process point from that is, when we're here, everything mirrors what we are authentically.
Yeah.
When we're in the other world, where conditioning wants to mirror everything we are that's not authentic, we need more reminders like that interrupt to tell us that we are living in, that we are authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so the takeaway could potentially be to create those interrupts.
So let me see if I follow you. Tell me about the interrupts.
Well, just that it's the absence of the conditioned process that makes sure that everything mirrors authenticity.
Yes.
And so if there's a default where conditioning is the mirror in your life outside the monastery, then there's a practice of creating those mirrors that will reflect the authenticity of your life outside the monastery.
Right.
Instead of looking to conditioning to determine which aspects of it are authentic or not, and be delightfully surprised when somebody actually mirrors it.
Right, so perhaps recording and listening more often, or
but all the ways in which you are authentic, mm-hmm, and embodied practice.
Yeah.
How the monastery, mm-hmm, is where you live all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
beautiful.
Thank you.
Sikora. I just want to say, as a person who lives at the monastery, I just always I hear people talking about how wonderful it is to be here and what a gift it is, and I just want to say what a gift it is, mm-hmm, to have people come to the monastery. I don't know, you know, it's just...
Yeah, we want that gift to be for everybody, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah. So
well, maybe that wasn't the sense you were saying. I'm interpreting it that way.
It goes both ways.
Yes.
You know, it's just mm-hmm, acknowledge that.
Well, and it's really, let me see if this is the sense that you are bringing to it, right? That being here is beautiful, and there's tremendous gratitude for the privilege of being someone who's here, who stewards the place, and who's who's part of this place. And there is that sense of when people do come here, there's just a chance for not only for everyone to have that experience, but for that to be mirrored.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And just that beautiful mirror of so many aspects of life. Yes. To have that here for a time is just wonderful.
Yes. Well, no, what drops in for me when you're saying it is that continuous appreciation about how every single one of us contributes to the whole.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And so there's one experience of all the fabulous aspects of life of the residents at this place. And then when we add to that, mm-hmm. we get a broader and broader appreciation of all of the ways in which all of life makes for a more and more beautiful experience.
Yes. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Let's talk about true abundance.
The practice of expanding awareness.
Expanding awareness. And I had this yesterday. We were given a Dogen quote.
Uh-huh.
Well, I was given a different quote. I was given one quote yesterday. And I was given that same quote was entirely different today. And I just had this interesting experience.
Oh, say more.
I picked that quote up yesterday and I read a quote.
Oh.
It was not actual what was on that piece of paper.
Uh-huh.
And I read it a number of times.
Uh-huh.
And I read, those who seek the path do not seek the true path. And I thought, that is a quote. I sat with that and tried to make meaning out of it, and what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this morning when I woke up, I picked that up again and read it, and it was that actually said on that piece of paper.
Well, what did it say? I'm
just... Those who seek the easy way do not seek the true way.
Uh-huh.
So I thought that was so, what an experience. That word easy was not visible yesterday.
Uh-huh.
It was just completely invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so... talk about the spirit of the necessity of the spirit of repetition, and to just see the filters that are there. That I swore I read it.
We could be completely certain.
Yeah, which happens so many times. I'm so certain of my experience.
Yes.
This is what happened, and I saw it, and it's in black and white,
Yes, literally.
Literally, black and white. And just, it's, and then in another moment, it's an entirely different experience.
So are you, I'm projecting that what you're seeing about that is to notice that pattern, and that is sort of an awareness of that pattern assists us to stay with the question of, is that really true?
Uh-huh.
And really go to look for that experience to be revealed to me.
To really go to look for that experience to be revealed. That's interesting. Because, so what, from the conditioned place, what wants to start getting set up is don't trust. Mm-hmm. I don't trust anything.
Yeah.
You can't trust any of my experience.
Yes. Well, which is what basically the only thing you can trust is is conditioning.
Conditioning, yeah.
Which is one belief of don't trust anything.
Wow, so that's really interesting.
Well, and the process steps are really clear. So there's a process where something's going on where the attention is on the conditioned mind as a consequence of which we miss something.
Mm-hmm.
There's intelligence that is sort of queasy about that little small voice that goes, really? Is that what that really is? Is that what that really is? And then in the moment when we drop the attention from conditioned mind, we realize We actually see it, right? It gets revealed to us. And when we go through that process a couple of times, we strengthen the still small voice that says, don't trust the belief, trust the experience. Till it tips over to, I'm not in the story all the time and coming to once in a while. I'm in the experience all the time, and once in a while I trip over the belief. That's the practice cycle.
Yeah.
Certainly my experience.
That's great, because I see that I thought of that there was that voice that's going, you know, and actually it doesn't make sense, so let's go back and read the quote again.
Yes.
And but then read it again the same way.
Yes.
Which was interesting. But still
read it again.
Go back and read the quote again.
Yes.
You know, Well,
and on to that, right? That's how awareness would tell the story.
That's great.
Right? Okay. That if the light was telling the story, it was, I didn't see it, so I went back, and I didn't still see it, and I went back, and then I saw it.
Yeah. Wow. Perfect.
Perfect.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Renee.
Yeah, very grateful to be here too. The depth of the practice and the conversation.
Say that a little bit louder.
The depth of the practice.
The depth of the practice and the conversation.
Very grateful for that. Yeah.
Brings us straight back here, doesn't it?
Yes. And I've been seeing a similar sort of segue from what's been talked about, and that is how the conversation, if it's about a subject that is good, maybe would be a word to describe it, I can get tricked into believing it.
So if the subject, if the content is good, within quotes, there's the ability for conditioning to trick you into believing it.
And it can take me on a tangent of trying to figure out how to do something that has the label good, that isn't helpful. That's just going and suffering.
So to watch the process that anything that is good in terms of content translates into action that may or may not be helpful. And that it's really a bamboozle to bring us to suffering, not necessarily resulting in goodness.
Right, well, none of the conversations result in goodness.
We know why, because it's basically meant to take us away from our inherent experience of goodness and presence, right?
Yeah, and I had experience, well, I've been having a lot of experiences because I just went through a big change physically, or I changed locations. And so, you know, when I'm here, there's one conversation, and when I'm in the other place, there's another conversation, and then in between the transition, going back and forth, there's a conversation, or many conversations, I should say. And I'm just noticing how all of those conversations will argue either side of whatever content, which could be about practice, right? You know, it could be about a good topic.
So the conversation is pretty constant. Doesn't matter where you are, it's going to always use that place to put you on either one or either side of the duality. And oftentimes the content that it uses, no matter where you are, is practice. That's good. Right? So if you're debating whether or not to do practice or whether one place is, we feel like we're practicing. But we're actually just in the conversation about practice.
It's a huge bamboozle. And so through recording and listening, you know, these questions arise, you know, to the mentor. What's one person to do kind of questions, you know? And what arises is just to be here and to drop it completely. And so, and that's the only practice that has to happen that transforms.
Yes. Instead of having a conversation about practice, do what practice is, which is bring the attention here and drop the conversation.
And so when it starts up, when I catch it, which I'm sure, well, you know, that's a story too, that I'm not catching it, but because I am catching it. And so when I do, I just say no. You know, I know that sounds like a cliche in the country we live in, but that's what I do. Is I just go, no, I'm not having a conversation about it.
Yeah.
There's no reason to have a conversation about it because I'm just here doing whatever I'm doing.
Yes, exactly so.
Yeah.
Wherever I am, that's where I am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the experience gets to be experienced, you know, whatever it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And which brings us back to your first part, that the conversation only ever takes us away from what is. And what is the only thing there is, so might as well be there for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like even sitting here today, there's conversation that starts up about, you know, how I'm going to take this and go do something with it. And, you know, oh, this is so great. I'm going to go do this and that. And it's like, just be here. Like, that's even right. Available.
Yeah.
Like,
uh-huh. Yeah.
Even though it's, you know, so then you miss the experience of just being here.
Yes, which is the experience of being here is being in the energy of excitement and presence.
Yeah.
Instead of taking that excitement and presence and harnessing it into something helpful some other time.
Yeah. We don't even know what will happen.
Yeah, exactly. And you can be very sure it never will.
It's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just the opposite of whatever it says. Yeah.
Yeah. Just be here and enjoy the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mary Jane, then June.
Actually, I was going to share something similar, which is coming here, it just became very obvious that the practice is to be here.
And at all levels, right?
Yeah.
Right? It's the physical place, but also what practice is being here. And this just happens to be an amplified structure where that is possible.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if I read the recording and listening guidance on the board, the message board, which was a little different than I had remembered it being, and the kind of the invitation was if you're walking, you're walking, you know, mm-hmm. and that you do recording and listening and transitions.
Uh-huh.
So I really, you know, I took a lot of walks, walking, and I used to do more with the earbuds.
Uh-huh.
And so it was just amazing to see going elsewhere, coming back, going elsewhere, coming back.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
and like really, yeah, it was just really incredible.
Uh-huh. So basically the experience of just being here while you're walking without the attention on something else assisted you to be here and to notice the movement of the attention.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it
mm-hmm.
really did.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe similar to what others mentioned, that when I'm here, it's challenging, but it's like good challenging, like, okay, but I have one job, like, it's to be here.
Uh-huh.
And somehow when I leave here, I have all these other jobs.
Yes. Well, I think it comes back to what Renee was talking about, in the sense of here, it's the variables are removed, and so we can all, it's the amplification, right? Remove all the variables so that we have only one thing to do, which is to pay attention. And you're right, it's challenging for the ego, because the ego counts on there being many things to do in order for the attention to be distracted.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we train ourselves without the variables so that we can, in our other lives, realize that they're still only the same job. It's just that conditioning has much more ammunition.
Well, yeah, and there are ways I can set things up, like, okay, I mean, I do need to, like, put things on the schedule and plan things out, but it doesn't need to be 24/7, right? I can just say, okay, this 30 minutes, is that when that's going to happen?
Yeah.
And so then it frees me up to know, okay, I don't have to spend the car ride back,
mm-hmm.
you know, thinking through everything I need to do. Like,
uh-huh.
okay, when I get back, let me spend 30 minutes looking at my week, and that will be my thing I'm doing.
Yes. So in other words, imitating the structure that assists us to be here, like learning the process principle around it and applying it to our lives by saying, between now and my car ride, I'm going to be here. Because I know at the end of the 30 minutes, I'm going to have, I mean, at the end of the car ride, I have 30 minutes where I'm going to work out what I need to work out. It's the same thing we do in meditation, right? Within this 30-minute structure, my only job is to come back to the breath.
Yeah, I'm curious. I am curious to learn how, at the monastery, you plan and implement stuff without getting to, you know, just able to just do it.
Come and stay with us for a month.
Oh, okay. Good.
Thank you.
June. Well, I've been sitting here listening to each person and trying to figure out an angle to come at what I want to say, so that I don't sound so identified as unruly and judgmental. And there have been several. And now I'm just trying to really want to spin this so that I come out looking better than I feel about it. The fact is, a part of me, or a part of egocentric karma conditioning self-hate, has been triggered. That hasn't been triggered in a long time. I know this part. I haven't worked with it very much. It is, I'll tell you the content, and you will get a sense then. So this part, this voice in my head, thinks that the cleaning out of the pond was done completely wrong and shouldn't have been done, and blah, blah, blah. It's just, and it feels so right. It is just adamant that it is right. And if I had been in charge, well, the fact is, I wasn't even down here. And so I'm just stuck in that place, and it doesn't feel very good. Mm-hmm. You know, I can say things like, well, it's not finished. Mm-hmm. And a month, it'll be very quick in a month, this whole thing, you know, this tissue pass. But right now, for the last couple of days, it is loud and it's adamant. And I'm kind of myself believing it and feeling resentful or something.
Well, may I ask you something?
How does that sound for that? I'm kind of judgmental.
Let me ask you something, Gina. What is it that is not, that you're not in touch with if you're listening to that?
What am I not in touch with if I'm listening to that? Well, the duality.
Say more.
This is about right and wrong. That's one thing.
Can I project widely?
Okay.
How about you so wish you were in the pond?
I wish I had been the one to be down here helping.
Well, in other words, there's such a sense of wanting to participate and belong. Right? And so if we're defensive about how things got done or whether it got done right, what we are not allowed to be is part of it.
Say that again.
Well, I don't know if this is your experience, but if I'm in a conversation about how it was done and what the consequences of it are and whatever else, what I'm not is appreciative or being able to be with the experience of what got done. Because if we're really listening to the conversation, it's not about getting the pond clean. It's about, wow, this experience of being in touch with life, and it's the transformative ha-ha of it, and the Zen parable we're going to write. That's what we're talking about, right? Being it with ego denied us the ability to be with what it was really about. On many levels. Now, when it's over, or while it's happening.
I'm going to see if I can reflect that. Being in a conversation, I'm not able to be with what it was really about. Mm-hmm. tell me again what it was.
I don't know that, right? Because what the conversation doesn't allow you to do, or that process which distances you from the experience, won't put you in touch with what's really going on for you behind being judgmental, being assessed as being judgmental, identified right or wrong or dualistic. So what are you feeling? What's really going on? What's the emotion behind that? Whether we know it or not, whether I could project it or not, that's what the conversation robs us of, is the ability to really drop into that place and experience it. Whatever it is, it's not the conversation.
Well, okay, I'm on the verge of tears. That sounds what's going on.
Yes. And what life experience does it rob you from? Maybe it's just life experience. You're not allowed to have that.
I'm just grateful for everything too, and
just grateful for everything. I'm gonna project for the recorder.
Hey, I'll project the recorder. I don't know now. I just had an amazing experience of experiencing what university is creating.
Uh-huh.
And not the amazing book and card pack, but actually the process of what university is creating.
Same thing.
Yeah, exactly. And custody of the eyes and custody of the attention. So I was noticing that with more people around and with all of this activity around, there was that pull to look,
uh-huh.
to check out what was going on and what people were doing. I noticed all of the conditioning around that, like somehow leaving a sense of wholeness and sufficiency to look at, to maybe not necessarily compare, but to look and see, like, if I look, will I get information about how to survive by looking at how other people are doing things?
Uh-huh.
Or if I look, will I get information about how to ready myself because somebody's coming to tell me I'm doing something wrong?
Mm-hmm.
All of those things. And about, so it was like a getting it more than ever before, what an assistance goes through the eyes is to working out our own salvation diligently, because I found that keeping, by not looking, there was that growing sense of being in touch with wholeness.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And so there was the practical experience of that, like washing, greeting what people were moving about and approaching. And then there was the experience of that last night in my hermitage when there was nobody else around. I noticed attention doing the same thing, going to order, like sort of like how other people are doing assignments, or doing that. Yeah.
Well, what drops in when you say that is custody of the eye and custody of the attention is our structures that assist being with wholeness and goodness.
Exactly.
And there's an awareness of the process of conditioning that wants the attention and the eyes,
mm-hmm.
as a way of distracting from
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, however that is termed, as your survival or as curiosity or whatever it is, what you're noticing is that it actually takes away from wholeheartedness.
Yes. Wholeness, authenticity, sufficiency,
adequacy.
And so as I was just kind of like kneeling on the floor of my hermitage recording and stretching and there was just that awareness here too when practicing custody of the eyes.
Yes, all
custody of the attention.
Yes.
And got to then have an amazing experience of doing the assignment from that wholeness within that flickering to you know, what can I learn about how to do the assignment right by imagining how other people are doing it?
And it would truly be imagining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even though there's a whole reality effect, but it is.
Yeah.
So
I think what you said was interesting, right? We only ever do anything from here.
Mm.
Whether or not we get to have that experience or not is based on where the attention is.
Uh-huh. I didn't hear that. I guess that. But
doing the assignment from here is the only way we ever do anything. And to watch the attention go to somewhere else denies us the experience of doing it from here, which is always where we do it from.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Something else went through, but it completely disappeared. So if it comes back, maybe in the next minute or so, I'll be happy. But otherwise, we're going to have to say thank you. Thank you, everybody. Mm-hmm.